London calling.
David here.
I have Chris from Paris Walks with me, who's doing Paris during the occupation on Friday as a virtual tour. I'm going to go over to Chris in a minute, but I have a personal story about this one. Paris Walks, Peter and Oriel, who run Paris Walks, they call this the Peach Melba of Paris Walks because it was really created for me. So I've got I feel very proprietorial about this. I've been going to Paris for 50 years, speaking absolutely zero French, and I remember seeing and being fascinated by lots of plaques, and it always said ECA Tombe, and then it would be a young man's name, 22 years old, something like that, and the date was always in August, the same date in August, and I thought that meant here is entombed. And then, of course, I later found out that it meant here fell, but it had to do with the occupation and the resistance. And I thought, well, that's so interesting. If I were running Paris Walks, I would create a walk that looked at this matter. And I pleaded with Oriel and Peter, and eventually they did it. So I take a special interest in this one. So that's my story about it. Chris, now you tell us a little bit about it. Hello, and glad you're here, by the way.
Thank you very much, David. Lovely to talk to you, as usual. Yes, on Friday, 7 p.m. UK time, we'll be doing a virtual tour of Paris during the occupation, and I will entertain, I suppose, if that's the right word, entertain you with stories of resistance, occupation. We'll talk also about the civilian population and how they fared during 4 years under the Nazi jackboot, if you like. We'll visit addresses which were key to the occupation, and also we'll talk about the dramatic events surrounding the liberation of Paris on the 25th of August of 1944. And I can even show you some of the shell damage and bullet holes that are still visible, if you look carefully, on the buildings of Paris.
And there will be some of those ECA Tombe plaques, is that right, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will give you a translation, a correct translation of those plaques.
You know, and, what moved me so very much about that was you know, the date. It was often, I think, August, correct me if I'm wrong, August 22nd, August 23rd, something like that.
All around the 25th, which is, if you like, the official capitulation of the German garrison.
Right.
But you've got sort of like this snowball effect as the Allies are getting closer and closer to Paris. You've got this growing insurrection among the civilian population, increased resistance activity, and you've got ordinary Parisians who haven't perhaps done so much during the occupation, just getting by day to day. They suddenly decide to pick up a weapon and try and bag a German. And the real resistance had a sarcastic acronym for those that suddenly became heroes at the liberation. They called them the RMI, the RMA, the Resistance Fighters of the Month of August, invisible for the rest of the time. And just a little anecdote as well, I was doing a public tour around Sèvres Babylon, and we were having a look at one of these plaques to an unknown fallen resistance fighter. And a lady came up, an elderly lady, and she basically said, "Oh, my father was in the Free French Forces under de Gaulle." And she, in fact, opened up her purse and showed inside his membership of the Free French Forces that she kept there daily, you know, walking around with it, which was rather touching. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, for sure. But what I found so moving about it was I mean, even though we weren't of that generation, the pictures of Paris celebrating its liberation came down to us, and the sense of joy and elation and how wonderful all of that was. But I kept thinking about these young men, and they were all 19 or 20 or 22 years old, and their lives ended, you know, a day or two before all of that. And I was just terribly moved by that.
Absolutely, and I think it is poignant, isn't it? And you've got this kind of euphoria around the liberation, which is tinged with the bitterness of occupation, and this incredible release of, you know, a rainbow of emotions, of grief, as well as, of course, relief. Mm-hmm. There, I agree.
Those plaques are very often on a corner, and one imagines that, you know, they went running around the corner, and, you know, were they armed? Well, lightly, I would think, and of course they were up against professional hard-nosed soldiers with bigger guns.
Absolutely. And of course, I mean, remember that the plaque, which, you know, you see on the corner of the road, possibly won't be the exact place where that person fell, because it might have been in the middle of the road or going across a square, but it would be the nearest position, if you like, to create some kind of a memorial. But of course, the plaques originally, they were improvised, and it would have been bereaved loved ones who just, you know, lit a candle there or put a bunch of flowers. So you had, if you like, these improvised memorials that sprouted up all over Paris, and then they decided that it should fall under the control of the Ministry of Culture, and they should control the plaques, the people who are remembered on the plaques, to check that they're heroes, and in fact, you know, their CV merits having a plaque. The cost of the plaque falling to the bereaved family, and permission to put the plaque on the wall from the owner of the wall. Do you see what I mean? So there's a whole sort of like, if you like, formalization of the plaques to the fallen resistance. And not just resistance, of course, ordinary civilians and, you know, ambulance men and firefighters. And you've got different profiles that were caught in the crossfire.
All sounds very French.
Yeah, well, that's it. And of course, at the liberation, everybody, you know, people were sometimes quite stupidly exposing themselves to danger on the streets just to be there. And, you know, it didn't end too well.
I can imagine.
Now, and sorry.
Go ahead.
Just to say that the number of civilians killed at the liberation is, you know, I'll give the statistics when you join my Zoom talk, but the statistics speak for themselves of how the civilian population put themselves in the line of danger.
Now, I think in terms of three-dimensional Paris, shoe leather on pavement tours, you do two, is that right, that have to do with this subject?
True.
And you are amalgamating this one. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so, because that's one of the joys of doing Zoom talks, is that you can sort of move virtually around the capital. And what we'll do is we'll take elements from the resistance tour and elements from the occupation and liberation tour. The resistance is on the left bank and the occupation is on the right bank. But I think a mix of that is a good idea, just to choose sort of like the best stories. And to give a sort of like a balanced overview.
So you're going to be zigzagging back and forth across that river.
Absolutely. And I'll provide maps as well and markers so that if you want to, you can trace the route yourselves. And when you come to visit Paris in person, then you can go over the route, you know, Chris, autonomously.
Or indeed go with you when you do it.
Well, I would prefer that, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely.
Where are you going to kick it off? What's the location that you're going to get the thing on, the scene center location?
Yeah, I think we'll start at the Hotel Lutetia, which was like an intelligence gathering center for the Germans. But I'm hesitating here, actually, David, for the simple reason as the way that I'm organizing this Zoom tour is thematically. So, and I'm going to try and reconcile the themes to sort of like a physical circuit. Do you see what I mean? But it's something I'm playing around with. And I've actually, in the last few days, confused myself by adding more wonderful stories that I've just picked up, which are just beautiful, and I can't resist putting them in. So, as you know, sort of like creating tours is an organic and never-ending process. And when you come across an irresistible story, then it just begs to be in there.
Exactly.
So that's what I'll be working on furiously over the next 2 days. But I assure you it'll all be ready for Friday.
And I'll bet you're going to have some fantastic images.
Yes, I've got some beauties, to be honest. Not just from my fancy new camera that I've invested in, but also from the archives as well.
What about, maybe this is going to make you hesitate, Chris, but what where are you going to bring it in? What's going to be the final stop or point?
I think we'll be finishing around the Hotel Meurice, which was the fortress command post of the German occupiers. And that was the scene of the dramatic events at the liberation. It was kind of concentrated around that area. Or maybe the Jeu de Paume, which was a clearinghouse for looted artwork.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there we go. Multiple choice.
Yeah.
Multiple choice.
That's interesting.
But I think that will certainly be the area. So we're around the Concord Square, the Tuileries Gardens, where you've got, you know, two very interesting aspects. Obviously, the liberation and the military act, all of the fighting that took place in that little zone. And also the looted artwork is rather a fascinating subject as well.
Right. Are there any addresses that are known to have been places where French resistance people worked or schemed?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll be showing you a couple of those.
And I'm fascinated. Do they still look pretty much the same, the fabric of the building and everything?
Absolutely. Buildings are still there. If you squint your eyes, you're back in the 1940s.
Okay, well, you've really whetted my appetite. Very much looking forward to going on this one, to seeing it. Are you scheduling any more down the road?
Yes, there's another one which is scheduled for the 4th of June. So if you can't make it on Friday, then you can sign up for the 4th of June as well. So that will give you time to sort out your planning and everything. Because, yes, it's coming up very shortly, the first one. And when you go onto the booking site, then you've got the choice of the two dates.
And Chris, what do you think about come August? Doesn't it make a lot of sense to run one on the anniversary, or are you guys going to be too busy out on the streets?
Well, yes, but we are starting, of course, to plan ahead, and I'd be happy to do a virtual Zoom talk on the 25th of August, for example, for the sort of like to celebrate the liberation of Paris. Why not? I think that's a very, very good idea. that planning is a little bit far ahead for the moment,
yeah,
but
sure.
Perhaps we can have a chat about that.
Yeah.
I think that's a very good idea.
Okay, well, anything to add?
Not really. I think just to say, come and join me on Friday, 7 p.m. UK time, and I'll talk you through the occupation, we'll talk about the liberation, and also the kind of strange universe that was Paris during the Second World War, rather surreal, I would say, in some ways. A different soundscape, and this is a little teaser that I'll leave you with. You had basically very few private cars that were allowed to drive by the Germans on the streets. Even if you had a car, then you couldn't get any gas to put in it. So that meant that the whole of Paris took to other forms of transport. And imagine, it would have been Paris without the sound of cars and the sound of pedalling and the sound of clogs, wooden clogs, because you couldn't get shoe leather. And so you had, you know what clogs sound like. Imagine thousands of pairs of clogs, sort of like walking down fairly quiet streets, and everybody on bicycles, so the whirring of the bicycle wheels and the chain. So that's the type of thing that we'll try and explore, just to try and get really into the heart of what it was like.
There's that wonderful tale about a German officer, young German officer, who became quote-unquote friendly with a Parisian, and he famously said to him, well, Paris is wonderful, but it's not quite the Paris I expected. And I think the Parisian said something like, well, you didn't see it before you got here.
Oh, they're perfect, perfect response.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to imagine that joie de vivre. Did that light go out completely during those? How many years was it, Chris? Was it?
Well, 4 years, wasn't it, really? From the summer of 40 to the liberation in the summer of 44.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it's a long time. But, of course, you've got kind of a stratification of the population, and the elite in society certainly didn't suffer to the same degree as your ordinary folk. Uh-huh. And that's one of the contrasts we'll draw as well. And we'll talk a little bit about those that got a little bit uncomfortably close to the occupiers. Mm-hmm. And in fact, hobnobbed with them. And, you know, as I put in the little teasers for the tour, the champagne certainly still flowed at the Ritz Hotel. So we'll be talking about those sort of like rather dubious relations between the occupiers and the occupied. And I'll be bandying around a few famous names.
What?
In that respect, yeah, sorry.
What a fascinating subject in this most extraordinary city. I mean,
absolutely. It's, you know, history. It's like a cake with layers, multiple layers, isn't it? It's so rich.
Right. Well, good stuff, amigo.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, David. Thanks very much. For talking to me, having a chat, and hopefully see you on Friday.
See you Friday. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.